Hey, welcome to the show. I'm Yanni Rude.
And I'm Just Terrell. You ever been out somewhere and overheard two people having crazy conversations?
Yeah, well, we all those people. We've been having these conversations since college.
Yep, it's the Regular Guys Random Thoughts podcast. Married at First Sight, season 17, the interview we've all been waiting for. Mm-hmm. Be sure to like, subscribe, rate, and leave a review.
Now, last time we did a Married at First Sight review was part two of the reunion. And I said to you, we need to do Where Are They Now? All right? You're like, no, I'm done. I'm like, yo, you haven't seen the trailer. I sent you the trailer and you're like, all right, I guess. Damn it, we'll do it. I'm sorry.
I wish I could read the text. I'm sorry. I wish I could just read the text that you sent me after watching it. Because I watched it, I was like, God, this bullshit. Are you kidding me? We're going to do this. And then Yanni texts me like, yeah, we don't have to do it. It's trash. I was like, thank you. Thank you.
It was a great trailer, though, man. It was
They got you.
Yeah, it was.
They got you. They got but, you know, good.
This is what it is when you talk about advertising. You know, working in the media is kind of like one of those things. You know, oh, yeah, we cut it. And how do people react? It's how I got on the Maker's Mark. You know, I don't know what it was about that commercial and, you know, the top. And I was like, oh, this, I got to try it. And that's what they got. They got me. They got me really good.
Hey, kudos to them. Mm-hmm. That they got somebody who knows the game. You got conned by a con man.
And shout outs to everybody getting into the chat nice and early, ready on time. And notice we were on time today. You know, Terrell wasn't late.
Nope, I already went and peed, so I don't have to like come off camera to try to hide and go do that. So I think I'm okay.
If you disappear, we know exactly what happened. Well, look, without further ado, man, as we've got everybody in here ready to meet the man himself, all right? You know, he jumped into the chat and spoke out before and then let himself be known and said, hey, I do want to come on the show. And it's not like because we've been extremely nice. So I'm actually surprised that he was like, yeah, I do want to come on the show. Michael Chiklis from Married at First Sight season 17. Michael, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. You weren't that mean. You know, you weren't too mean. I could take it.
Wait, I think we are fair.
I think we are fair.
Oh, extremely fair. And there were plenty of times, Terrell, you were like, I think Michael's a good dude. I was like, I am a good dude.
That was to get you to come on the show. I just have to throw those out. Michael's a really good dude. He saves puppies. He does all these things. You know, so that was how I got you hooked in.
Oh, it worked. And I'm seeing some of these chats come through. I will do my best to be direct and succinct. But if I do start, if the word salad becomes too heavy, don't, you know, feel free to reel me in. I might need it. So,
hey, the ladies are loving the new hair as well, too.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the love. It's kind of wild right now, but we're working with it.
So speaking of your style, let's just start right here with the elephant in the room. Okay. Uh-huh. Are there no good pants in Denver that you were like, you know what? Let me get the skirt. you start wearing skirts?
I got something for you. When I saw the little banner you put, no skirts, what, just straight off.
Facts.
Straight facts. I mean, I did bring one of them.
I knew it.
One of them.
I knew he was going to do it. I said, he's probably going to wear a skirt on the show.
You baited me. Nah, I mean, it was an element. It was a fashion element that I got into. I shouldn't say I got into that. I tried in LA prior to moving to Denver. And I kind of just rolled into Denver, kind of preserving what my style was in LA. I quickly learned that there's a big disconnect. You know, people are a lot more casual out here, more utilitarian with how they dress. But also in fairness to Denver, everyone has always been really complimentary of it. Like, I've never gotten any bad energy from it. So that always kind of encouraged me to explore more of those things. And like in the summertime, like this is made of like a nylon material, like warm-ups would be made out of. So it's thin, it's easy, it's breezy. So
you can breathe. I get it.
Very breathable, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Your boys can breathe.
Very important question from Keaty, apparently. Commando?
You thought we were going to have the hard questions. Nope.
I'll say that it's not out of the question.
Now, I see you got suns out, guns out, got the arms out. People noticing the tank. And obviously, you've been working out. We've seen your workouts on the show. You do have something coming up, the Haymakers for Hope, June 13th. Tell us a little bit about that real quick before we get into all the tea.
Sure. No, appreciate it. Haymakers for Hope is an organization that puts on events all throughout the country, usually like marathons, and their kind of crown jewel event is a big boxing event. This is their sixth year in Denver putting this on. So like you mentioned, June 13th at the Mission Ballroom, which is a big music venue here, they're putting on this big boxing event. I think there's 12 bouts, so 24 of us are participating. Each one of us are impacted by cancer in some way, shape, or form. So we get to share our story. And in my case, I'm fighting for two of my cousins that have battled cancer and a close friend of mine who's just starting her battle against cancer. And we all have fundraising commitments. So that's essentially the spirit of the event. We're trying to fundraise. Boxing is quite the challenging sport. So, you know, it's like we're trying to take on an endeavor to kind of show our commitment to raising awareness for cancer research, because all the funds and proceeds goes towards a bunch of different organizations that have dedicated themselves to cancer research.
Nice. Well, great cause. And, you know, it's an interesting sport because it seems it's 3 minutes, but you're doing 2 minute rounds. And people go, oh, 2 minutes until you're in the ring. And you're actually, it's easy to throw a punch against a bag. It's easy to throw a punch against some mitts, which is a little harder than the bag because the mitts are a little further back, right?
Yep.
But then somebody else is trying to hit you. What's the training been like for you in this moment so far?
I mean, it's been pretty intense. I've really tried. I mean, I've even tried to get myself in the right mindset where, like, I've been sleeping on the couch to try to put myself in more of like a training camp mode. Mm-hmm. But it's been pretty vigorous. I usually have two or three workouts a day. One will be like strength and conditioning. Another one will be cardio or endurance specific. And then one will be boxing specific. So that's kind of been my regimen. Usually 6 times a week, I'll dedicate one day to just rest. And then, of course, from a diet and overall nutrition standpoint, really locking that up. Haven't been able to consume alcohol since February. So really just trying to get
you covered.
Yeah, please.
So, did I say that out loud?
I know. That's been the most challenging part.
You know, before we get to all the tea, Happy Gardener says strong work. Haymakers for Hope. How can we support?
Oh, appreciate that question. Yeah. You can go to haymakersforhope.org and then you could actually go to our direct event, which is called Rumble in the Rockies 6. And then from there, each of us fighters have our own page. And then donations could be made that way. And it'll go to our specific, fundraising goals. And if you guys are curious, they also posted the matchup. So you'll be able to see my opponent.
Are you scared?
I wouldn't say scared, but I definitely have a lot of respect for him. We got to spar. So they had us do a checkpoint about 3 weeks ago because they want to make sure there's no crazy mismatches, right?
Right.
Him and I have a very similar build. We have a very similar style in how we fight. I could tell he has a motor in him, so I can't depend on him tiring out. He's gonna be a tough fight for sure.
All right, I'm putting $10 on Brennan.
Damn.
That's who it is, isn't it? Put $10 on Brennan.
That's messed up. Here's the bad thing about it, and I'll say this because Michael is bold enough and strong enough to wear a skirt proudly. I'll put my money on Michael.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Bet taken.
He's a bet taken. Mm-hmm. Well, look, as we get to the mess, because we get to see some of the stuff that happened, and you had one of the Married at First Sight first with what everyone's now, who everyone's now calling Julia Roberts, the runaway bride, right?
Yep.
I know there are certain things you can't say about her. But yeah. How is it that we never got to see who she is? What kind of lawyer does she have that Married at First Sight said no?
I mean, look, I think all of us were asking that question, right? Because I think going through it, one of the biggest things that I was curious about when it was going to air was I wanted to see her side of the story, specifically wedding day, because being there, you know, I got to interact with her friends and family. I got to feel the tone and just how much of a disarray everything was. So I wanted to see what that lead up was like, because everything I had heard was, you know, just it was chaotic on that side. And there was a moment of order, which resulted to what you guys got to see a little bit of on screen. What you guys saw was what essentially happened. Now, to your point, was the voice modulated? Yes. Mm-hmm. But what you hear in terms of like, I can't do this. I don't want to marry a stranger. That is what I was specifically told.
Mm. So since all this, has she reached out to you at all?
No. I would say our only interaction outside of what you saw at the altar, we had a brief interaction in the back. Because when everything was released, that picture where you just see me next to like a pink cutout, that actually was a picture of us originally that was then altered later. And so when we were kind of doing those things in the back, that was our other interaction, which was hours later. Like I had already kind of decompressed from it. I'm assuming she had to an extent. But other than that, we had no communication.
Couple questions in here. One, why didn't your first bride attend the bachelorette party? Now, we did notice some people were blurred. Was she at the bachelorette party initially?
Oh, yeah, she was there. So,
okay, so we were right. Yeah.
Essentially, there was enough content with the bachelorette party that they were able to show it to you guys without revealing her. But the reason I know she was there is when I told the group before they left their honeymoon about what happened, like they were kind of telling me what they had experienced that night at the bachelorette party and how even then she was having some doubts. So they had shared that with me. But it's also why you don't see, because I think for most previous seasons, kind of the formula is you see like the groom's meet and the bride's meet. I'm assuming you guys didn't see that because there would have been no way to show that.
Without her.
Without her.
And because of them cutting her out of the bachelorette parties, why we got to see Emily upside down at the bar. I got you.
Nice. That's what I was thinking. That's what blocked her. They said, no. Quick, pan to Emily twerking, you know, on the wall. Quick.
It'll save it. Trust me. Kitty has a great question. Was she your physical type?
Yes. She was. And I think that's why, like, from what you did see, I think there was a small blip in time where people thought Chloe might have been the runaway bride, because from the back, like with the dark hair and stuff, she was my physical type. Yeah.
Interesting. So let me ask this question then. If you could choose between her, you had a choice between her and Chloe. I think I know what the answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Sure.
Who would you have chosen?
Oh, it'd have been Chloe 100%.
Good answer. Like
that's an easy choice. I mean, no shade to the runaway. I mean, she was pretty as well, but I found myself very like physically attracted to Chloe when I first saw her.
Now, speaking of Chloe, let's get straight to I just want to get straight there first and we'll go back in time. What's the real reason you didn't choose to stay with Chloe? Go ahead. We all want to know, because I know that just changed everybody's perception of Michael on the show. Yep. Oh, Michael, what the hell?
What the hell, right? Now, this will be while I need your guys' guidance, because I will try to explain it to the best of my ability. But the challenge here is, I'll start here. I really didn't see like what I'll call a fatal flaw in her, which I think makes it difficult to connect with that, right? Because it's easy when you could point to a behavior and say, well, these were the behaviors I didn't like and I didn't feel and I felt would irreconcilable. Like, were there behaviors that I, you know, weren't fond of? I'm sure if I nitpick, I could find them. But there wasn't like a fatal flaw. For me, I went into this experience with a particular success criteria. And for me, it was this. I didn't expect to be in love after 6.5 weeks. And I will address the five foster kids in Animal Farm.
Because I'm going to ask. Yeah, that's my question next.
Let me address that first, because I don't want that to be hovering. So in fairness to Chloe, she kind of trolled me a bit there. She was kind of getting me back. When I was asking her about wearing the earrings when Pastor Cal was coming to visit us, I was essentially trolling her a little bit because she knew I would do it. And so my whole thing was like, are you going to say no? Are you going to say yes and risk me actually putting these earrings on and he comes, right? So her moment when we were at the animal sanctuary, like I knew we were going to talk about her hopes and dreams. And she like dropped that, you know, the whole five foster kids thing. And I was like, are you serious? Like five of them? And like, what are we doing here? And I could see when she was looking at me, I was like, oh, okay, I know what we're doing here. That's why later on I bring it back up. And I was like, I don't have a problem with foster kids. I have a problem with five of them. And that's why you don't see that conversation happen again. So right. I'll clear that up there. But for me, I had a certain success criteria. I didn't expect to be in love after. And our timeline was a little shorter. We had just over 6 weeks. It was like 6 weeks and some days, right? I was like, I don't expect to be in love, but I expect to have this really strong emotional desire to not just continue a relationship, which I felt was like here, but to continue a marriage. So I had a big bar to clear. And my thought was that, okay, 30% of that will be based on the match, right? That they have all this data, they'll match me great. That'll get me 30% of the way. 70% will be this married at first sight experience. However they tailored it, the things that they're going to have us go through, the exercises, the discussions, that will fulfill that 70% to get me there. The problem was when we were starting to get to the end, when I started to talk with her about my concerns, my biggest concern was like, I feel like we're growing, but not at a rate that once this ends, I'm going to get to that level and be like, okay, we have built enough here to continue a marriage. So that was my problem, right? We got to decision day, and let's say the bar was here. I felt like we were somewhere here. Like we made a lot of progress, but not enough for me at the time to be like, okay, that I'm not just comfortable, but confident that we have enough to build a sustainable and everlasting marriage.
So Terrell, can you relate to that point? You're saying like, you know, it's just not without being able to point to one thing. Cause I know in the past I've had that issue too, where it's like, you know, you're like, nah, it's just, I can't point to what it is, but it's just not it.
I could understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can understand it, but my challenge or question to that is, I feel like everybody who gets married is in that same place, right? Even though they've been together for years, they're hoping, hey, this is going to go the distance. I don't think, you know, all the people who got divorced, they didn't get married with the intent to get divorced. So it seemed like y'all had enough to say, hey, let's keep going and see what happens. So do you kind of regret that now? Because I can't imagine you would date anybody and come decision day where there'd be at the altar getting married, you'd be like, I know 100%, this is perfect. And this is going to last forever.
Sure. And I mean, to your point, I knew there would always be doubt. So I want to make sure that I'm not conveying this idea that there would be no doubt, but that the optimism and such heavily outweighed the doubt, right? That's where I was hoping to be. In terms of regret, I do regret not looking at it from a different lens. I do think that I had too high of a bar. I think, and I compare, because, you know, Chloe and I, because we are friends, we've been able to kind of have a postmortem and talk through this. And for her, it was almost the inverse. For her, she wanted to show her level of commitment by saying, look, my bar isn't going to be all the way up here. As long as like there's a level of compatibility, we see the world in a similar way, and there's a base level of attraction, I'm going to, you know, say yes, because that's how I'm going to display my commitment. So I wish I would have been more of that mindset. And I wish when I talk about on the reunion about, you know, not having certain conversations or not, you know, presenting an environment where we could talk through solutions, that's essentially what I meant. I think that was the big conversation that we missed, was like, I just assumed, oh, this is my success criteria. That's hers too. She wants to feel this overwhelming desire to stay married. And that was a false assumption. If we would have had that conversation, I think I can't guarantee that it would have been different, but I definitely think that it would have been a much stronger possibility.
Do you think if she was matched with you from the beginning and you had the same amount of time as everybody else, that probably would have helped because y'all's whole thing was pretty rushed?
I do think it would help, and not just from a timing perspective. I think what was challenging is having to be around the postmortem for the other couples. Like that was a whole that was a whole different dynamic, right? Like here we are trying to foster our relationship and at the same time absorb most of these relationships around us having had ended or are coming to an end. And negativity. I think that, yeah.
Sorry, I was saying negativity has a way of you know, spreading a lot faster than positivity. Do you think that affected your relationship?
When we look at it in hindsight, I think it did. Because one of the times that felt the most tense in a conversation, it was rarely one of our, like, issues, let's call it.
Right.
It would be like, oh, I just met with the guys. This is what I heard. And it'd be for her, I just met with the girls. This is what I heard. And I had a natural bias towards the guys because that's who I'm talking with. She had a natural bias at that time towards the women because that's who she was talking with. And that's what... That's when I would feel the tension, like, and we would have to actively be like, wait a minute, this isn't even our relationship. Why, we don't need to invest energy, like trying to defend what we individually heard. But we had to learn that. And you could still, you know, we still felt that in the beginning, you know, when we first started having those conversations. It wasn't until like the second or third iteration of that we're like, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Like, why? We don't need to get involved like that.
So Black Tornado asks, had you been with Chloe from the beginning, do you think you would have been tempted to be sucked into the to the deception and the pack that the guys made or that, what's his name?
Allegedly, Cameron.
Allegedly, Cameron is the puppet master of the whole thing.
It's extremely, I mean... It's very difficult for me to imagine getting sucked into that. Cause even when we all first met, I mean, yeah, actually the one I did gravitate towards to the most in the beginning was Cameron, but it was because like I was joking with him the most and like we just were ribbing on each other. But I kind of was of the mentality that it's great to have these people as part of the experience and know that other people are going through it with you. I don't want to depend on their journey to inform mine. That was like part of my mindset going into it. And I was quite honestly kind of, the one concern I had there is like, I hope I don't like alienate them or come off as an asshole, right, so to speak, by kind of having that thought process.
Now, Terrell is among the people who felt that your relationship with Chloe was fake.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Would you like to address that?
I would love the details. Yeah.
If you will. So sure. When it all first started, I was like, hey, this is great. You know, Michael gets a second chance because he deserved it. Everything we're seeing from the other couples, I felt like Mavs needed a win.
Sure.
And then the more I started watching, I just kept telling myself, Mavs needs a win. I don't know if this is real. Uh-huh. And then Chloe just seemed... She seems like a great person. This is not a slight on Chloe at all.
Sure.
But she just came across very... For her to get thrown into this mix, she just seemed so poised and perfect. I was like, is she a... People were trying to say she's an actress. Voice. And I was like, no. And I was like, yeah. Is she? Then I was like, the more I started watching, I just came to the conclusion. I joined the rest of the folks. I'm like, this isn't real.
Negativity.
They didn't have sex. This is all a thing that they put out there. I said it. You heard me say it on the weekend. I'm like, I got to ask them. I don't buy it.
All right. Well, let's start. How about we start there? And then I'll categorically address the other items. So one of the things that I wasn't worried about at all, and I was surprised it didn't come up more in the show. So at the wedding, when I'm talking to her friend Cesar and her mother, and we talk about children, and I explain that, look, doesn't have to be biological. The next thing we talk about is sex. Because they explain to me, like, look, she wants to make sure to build an emotional connection. Are you okay if things progress slower in that realm? And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I understand it. Because I didn't view it as like, if sex takes longer, then we're just doing nothing up until that point. And we had been very physical with each other right on the first night. And so I knew, I was like, okay. And we had an open, transparent conversation. Like, I wanted to know, like, look, I get you. I get wanting to build an emotional connection, that I see value in that. I don't want to mystify intimacy. So, like, I like to be naked a lot. I get the sense you do too. Does this bleed into that? Like, do I have to be more conscious about being naked around you? And does that have to also follow this progression? It's like, absolutely not. Like, I want us to still explore each other. I want us to still, you know, experience things. I just think specifically as it comes to sex, like, let's just be a little bit more progressive there in that sense. And I was like, okay. And she was like, and look, I don't think it has to be like a conversation where it's like, okay, now we can do it. I think we'll both know. And I was like, all right, I think so as well. So I felt like we always had really great physical chemistry. So, I mean, I will try my best to say it that wasn't fake. I mean, the footage that you kind of were able to see, like
blurred footage,
that, trust me, we did not expect that to ever make the light of day. So that was a surprise to us as well. But yeah, in terms of her coming off as, let's say, performative, would you say that that's an accurate descriptor, you know, feeling like
accurate?
So, and I mean, we talked about this with Dr. Pia, because that was one of the, when she was questioning our authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. That was one of the things she was citing. Like, you guys seem too polished, too curated. In retrospect, I personally believe that there was residue from interacting with the other couples. And so they were had a little bit more of a heightened awareness on that. But the way I explained it to her, and Chloe was kind of reaffirming this, is when we speak, especially to the experts or to the camera, when it's not a natural conversation. And again, the experts to us, at least, are like the pillars of the show. So we have a certain level of respect and reverence for them. We know when they're coming, like we have a schedule. We dip into kind of the same area of, like, when we're at work, like the nature of her work, like she puts on big fundraising events. So she's speaking to large crowds. She's kind of tapping into that. And, you know, my work involves a lot of C-level interaction and, you know, forums. And I kind of tap into that. So I think a lot of the times when we're talking with the experts or we're talking to the camera, we're tapping into that. And specifically with her, because she's so polished and poised in that type of environment, some people interpret it that way, but that's the way I would summarize it is that's authentically her. Like when she's speaking to a group of people or new people, like when I introduced her to my friends, like that is how she speaks. That's how she handles herself. She always has a strong level of poise. Now the drawback is, you know, that's why she got to go to bed at like 9 PM. That takes a lot out of her, you know?
Well, that answers it for me. And I took a note. Yeah. I'm going to try this. I'm taking notes from you, Michael. The next girl I start dating, I'm like, hey, I like to walk around naked. So are you okay?
That's how you
got to
do it. Use the bathroom door open and see what happens.
You just gotta whip it out. See what they do. I don't look like Michael, but, you know, maybe they like him a little fluffy.
People are like, oh, no, never mind. I'm out.
Turn the lights off. Can you make it a little darker, please?
Here's the question. Since you brought up the experts, because the experts caught strays all season long, season before you, the season before that, the season before that. The experts have been catching a lot of flack over the last couple seasons. What do we not know about the process and the experts and the involvement in the process that we don't... We watching it have no idea, because we think we see it all.
I mean, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt in this respect. And I think it may have came up in the reunion in a certain way, but when you're going through the process, especially the point where it feels like, oh shit, this might actually happen, is when you go to meet them for the first time. I think they showcase it in the matchmaking episode, like when you're meeting each of them individually and they're asking like a panel of questions, that's kind of the big defining moment where you realize you're among the small amount that may move forward. I think, and it's the first time you're really exposed to the cameras and what this might look like. Mm-hmm. So I think naturally all of us are putting our best self forward, which on one hand is great. You want to shine what your qualities are and what you bring to the table. I think, like in retrospect, it helps more if you also have that same level of openness on what's not so great about you and what your challenges are going to be. Because I think the natural inclination is to feel like, oh shit, if I tell them the things I'm not good at or the things that would, you know, stifle my development, they may not want to pick me. They may not want me for this process, right? Like that, I think there's just a natural inclination to feel that. So in fairness to them, I think some of the flaws and vulnerabilities that we have, as intensive and as much data as they collect on us, you know, it's easy to have those blind spots, right? And some of them we're just not aware of. So I think that there's elements of that that contributed to things potentially not working out. And I'm sure, you know, everyone says this, but you may think you know what you're getting into and what this is going to feel and look like. And then it happens. Right. And then you really start to realize, oh, this is different. You know, I wouldn't have expected responding this way. I didn't expect, you know, for it to have this kind of impact on me. There's so much variability that's beyond anyone's control, that a lot of those adjustments, it's a learning experience that happens to unfold on camera. I'm trying to think if there's anything particular that I think would have contributed to how crazy our season was. The only thing that I could point to, and because I kind of used to harp on this, is that dating in Denver is uniquely challenging, I would say. And I think a little bit of that was reflected in our experiences. You know, that's one of the things that I personally noticed. I've been here now for 4 years, and I thought I was coming from the most difficult dating environment, which was LA. So I thought, man, like, Denver, this is going to be easy. And surprisingly, I found out it is not. And so I think there's an element of just what the dating culture is here and the disconnect among young adult men and young adult women. So I think that also, you know, shows up in the finished season here.
So there's a majority of women in Denver play the victim role, and then a lot of the guys in Denver don't like to sleep with people.
Maybe it's better I say the specific behaviors may not be what runs rampant here, but the end result of the disconnect.
How did you feel about the experts' matching skills, though? Because they matched you twice and neither worked out. Is it something that you would do again? Or, and not saying necessarily with Mavs, but just even using matchmaking in this process to meet your mate?
I would. And the reason why is my opinion going into this was that, like the same percentages I quoted previously, the matchmaking isn't the majority, in my opinion. And I think that's why most of this show, 90% of it, is our journey, not what goes into the matchmaking and all that, right? Like, I feel like that's a smaller percentage of it. To me, the big part of it is the actual experience and like applying yourself to the process. Now, with me in particular, with me and Chloe not working out, I don't fault the experts at all. I thought she was a great match. I mean, when I got that chance to meet up with them, you know, I wanted to restate and reaffirm what was really important to me, which was that sweetness, someone who's smart and being silly, like those three things, right? And Chloe had those three things in spades. Like, when I saw her, I knew, okay, that is definitely a sweet woman. Like, she's like, you could feel it radiating from her. Once we started interacting, I was like, you can't have that kind of quick banter without being intelligent. And then the silliness was kind of already wrapped into there. So I don't blame them for us not working out. Like, I think that is a result of, you know, myself and her.
Well, quick question. Sorry to tell. Besides the Denver Broncos, besides the Denver Nuggets, Donnelly wants to know, do you know any black men in Denver? The experts couldn't seem to find any.
That surprised me. Because there are plenty of black men in Denver. Like, I'm like looking at my pool of friends.
Don't tell me about your black friend. Don't do it. Don't do it.
No, It's just more like even like just going out and what I'm exposed to, like at my boxing gym, when I'm out and about, you know, I mean, going around town. I mean, yeah, there are some places that are more homogenous, mm-hmm. you know, certain venues out here that are more homogenous. But in general, like that did surprise me. Not a lot. I feel like there's not a lot of Asian folk out here. I feel like I'm trying to hold that down. But yeah, that surprised me.
Well, I will say that if you and Chloe had stuck together, y'all would dominate the city of Denver for couples game nights, Trivia Pursuit and Scrabble. No one would have a thing on y'all. They would just like, is Michael and Chloe coming? I don't want to play.
I'm out.
You know, there's a lot of talk about the other castmates, right?
Yep.
Matter of fact, question coming from Regina at rgrtpod.com says, couple questions for Michael. What does Michael's mom think of him not telling her about Chloe? I'm assuming that she watched the show. And two, who do you believe or know is telling the truth about the plan to control the couples would share when filming?
Okay. So in terms of my mom, I mean, that was part of my strategy in the sense that I knew when I would tell her whether it was happy news that, oh, look, this wonderful relationship worked out, or if not, I knew she wasn't going to focus on why you didn't tell me. She was more so going to focus, okay, like, well, what is the end result? How are you right now? So one of the reasons that I wanted to not tell her until the end was that I could show her in either case, either right. A, everything worked out and we're great, or B, things didn't work out, but I'm okay. Like, you see that I'm okay. So she understood. I mean, she obviously was like, she wanted to better understand, like, what was I most concerned about? And I told her, quite frankly, the thing I was most concerned about was having to essentially split my resources in managing you and making sure and, you know, quelling your concerns and worries. Cause reality TV, like, she doesn't consume reality TV. She's a Steve Harvey Family Feud kind of woman. That's as reality as TV as she gets. And so, you know, the thought of having to exert emotional resources doing that while also trying to cultivate and build this marriage under these unique circumstances, I felt like I need to make sure I put everything in this marriage and that's where my emotional resources are. This is not a time for me to even try to split it like that.
Well, your mom's nicer than my mom. My mom would still be mad at me that I didn't tell her.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
So second part of Regina's question about who do you believe or know, because, you know, you were behind the scenes, behind sure. enemy lines. who was the mastermind? Was it Claire? Was it Cameron? Was it the women? Was it the pink ladies or the bros?
So this is the thing. I never got the sense, and I never subscribed to the idea that there was like one ultimate mastermind, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in fairness, I'll say straight up, of course, you know, my perspective is probably going to be biased because it was primarily informed by the guys. Outside mm-hmm. of that is it was whatever I experienced and assessed and whatever Chloe shared with me based on her experience with the women. Because as you notice, like, I don't have any outside of the where are they now when I meet up with Lauren and Claire, like, I don't have, you know, discussions with any of the women, just them. Mm-hmm. and vice versa. So this is how I interpret it. When we started to kind of get integrated with the group, and the biggest question that Chloe and I had respectively was like, what was life like before we came? Because now we're here and right. everything seems like it's a mess. You know, by the time we got there, you know, Claire and Cameron were separated and Cameron was having his heart condition. Like, I didn't have any like filming opportunities with Cameron until like that one pizza party and when we had our phone call. And then where are they now? Right. Lauren and Orion had already been weeks on out, right? Emily and Brennan were hanging by a thread, and Austin and Becca, I mean, they were the only glimmer of hope and they were going through their challenges. But what we learned was there was a time when they were actually all on good terms.
Right.
And they seemed to like, they were really intent on the beginning, from what I understood, to like navigate this so that you don't have to talk about how are you going to handle things if it works out, right? Like, if I want to stay married to you and you want to stay married to me, that's good news story. That's a happy ending. We don't need to figure out what that needs to look like, right? But what if things don't work out? What if we don't click like that? I think that's where their collective minds were like, how do we, if that happens, how do we manage that so we're not just this big dramatic shit show? Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the umbrella that they were operating under when they were all talking. And then from there, I think there were little offshoots where each couple kind of, they had their own, like, this is how I want to handle it, right? Like, I want to do this, I want to do that. And my sense is that, especially when there was crosstalk of like, well, we're doing this in our relationship. Oh, that's weird. We're doing this. Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar. You start to, I think, again, from my opinion, I think from the women's perspective, when they saw similarities, they automatically equated that to like a some sort of connection there, right? Like, oh, wait, if my guy's doing that and your guy's doing that, I think they're collaborating or cooperating, where I think it may have been a little bit more independent of that. And I think from the guy's perspective, there was this hyper focus of like, I don't want to just have these crazy arguments, you know, with the woman I'm with. There was this elevated concern about not being able to manage it in a civil way on camera. So that was kind of the overall sense that I got. And I think the challenge was when they all went there, when they all were trying to deal with things individually, and then you had these cross interactions, that's when, and I think Becca kind of alludes to it in a later episode where she's like, yeah, you know, I'm talking with Emily and I feel like it's weird that like we haven't had sex and you guys haven't had sex. And in my opinion, it's like, yeah, but I think the reasoning is really different between the two, you know, but I understand like the, how those connections would be made, but I never got the sense that there was like, here are the marching orders. This is what we're going to do. These are the steps. Let's all fall in line with this. It was more like,
right,
here's the umbrella. We're going to each operate. Oh shoot. We're kind of doing things similar. Wait a minute. Does that mean this is a big plan? Oh no, things are going left. Now we're at odds.
Dr. Pia kind of called it out on them and this whole group think. And I think that was a great point. Just like Captain for Creativity says, hey, y'all, can we talk about if Michael knew about Chloe's problem with Lauren reaching out to him on social media? How I felt about both Lauren and Chloe after the last episode aired.
Yeah, so the interesting thing there is my understanding of that. Now, in fairness, Chloe and I, once the show ended before the reunion, we hadn't really talked until the reunion. So there was months where her and I didn't interact. So your boy was a little scared going into the reunion. Like I was a little nervous of what that was going to be like with her, because I didn't really know. I mean, I had a little idea. We had maybe two conversations, but I didn't know her overall where her headspace was at. It wasn't until after the reunion and we kind of had our one-on-one that we were in a good place and started building a friendship. I knew there was something happened there, because as Lauren explains, she did add me on Instagram. We connected on there. And then maybe like a week later, she had hit me up and was like, look, I'm sorry. I have to remove you as a follower, and I'm going to unfollow you. I had a conversation with Chloe. She didn't appreciate the fact that I connected with you via social media. I said, that's fine. I mean, I understood. I didn't want it to get any messier and stuff. But that was significantly before Where Are They Now, right? So I knew about that. That happened in the time frame leading up to the reunion. So I knew that they had a conversation about it. I didn't know that it was that big of a schism. I honestly thought at the time that, like, because Chloe and I hadn't talked, you know, she may have not appreciated that there are other people from, you know, other women from the cast connecting with me on there. And I believe at the time she was, you know, trying to foster a friendship with them. So I kind of just chalked it up to that time.
But I'm confused, because it's normally, if, I think after the honeymoon is when y'all get y'all's phones back, or you have your phones, you're on a honeymoon.
Oh, we have our phone. So with usually what they do is like when we're actually filming, the protocol is supposed to be we're supposed to give up our phones while we're filming. But generally speaking, they'll be like, you can have them on you. Just don't be like when we're actually filming stuff, don't be on your phone. But it's not anything super restrictive, like you need to turn your phone off. You can't have your phones on you, you know, during the season or anything like that.
But do they tell y'all not to follow each other on social media until after a certain point? Because I would think all of y'all would have just connected anyway.
I believe you're right. I think in an ideal world, well, I'm trying to think in terms of the social media rules. I don't think that was the case because before the show airs, it's not a concern because no one knows that we're on the show. Mm-hmm. After it airs, I think to your point, ideally, they probably don't want us connected there because they're afraid like, oh, well, people might start speculating who's friends or who's right. not together.
Okay.
I think to your point, the biggest thing is like, don't connect with your spouse mm-hmm. on there, you know, because right. then now they could speculate like, oh, they were connected here and then they're not connected here.
So we have a lot of questions in the chat, right? So I'm going to do this real quick so we can just do rapid fire on some of these questions. Sure.
Let's see him.
Barbie T said, please ask Michael if he was recruited for Married at First Sight or if he decided to sign up on his own.
Sure. No, I was definitely recruited. I was reached out to. So when you're recruited, it's essentially just to raise awareness. Like you're not fast tracked or anything like that. They're just trying to get you to apply because they think like, oh, well, you might be a good candidate. So I was a part of that. Someone had reached out to me on Instagram. And at first I was like, who's this? Cause they're very vague, right? They're like, oh, we're going to be filming a dating show in Denver. We think it may be potentially something you're interested in. I ignored it. They followed up. I looked them up on LinkedIn and I was like, oh, this is someone real, you know? And I was like, kinetic content. I didn't put two and two together. I asked for the details. They wanted to set up a phone call. That's when I found out it was for Married at First Sight. And then I had to, like everyone else, I had to submit application with a video. And then from there, I progressed.
So unlike our last person we interviewed, not quite a first round draft pick, but you were you were in there.
Jay Sayso says, would men approach you when you were wearing a skirt?
No, you know, I think that's, I mean, I get it because it's a skirt and whatnot, but I don't get the sense when I'm walking the streets of mm-hmm. Denver or anything that it gives off like that kind of energy. Like it's not like a frilly tutu or anything like that. If anything, I feel like it looks more like feudal Japan inspired versus ballerina inspired, you know?
Great one. Matt says, did Chloe really not know she was a second chance? And what did they tell her to explain the late addition and the late wedding?
Yeah, she did. She really didn't know. Now, she knew like, well, something must be up because they initially told her, like all of us, when you go through it, they tell you, okay, one of two things is going to happen. Either by this date, we'll tell you that you were selected or not selected, or this date will elapse. And if you hear nothing, you're not selected. Mm-hmm. Now, from what she shared with me, she was specifically told that she wasn't selected because what was shared with her was that she was kind of on the cusp, like on that cusp. And ultimately they decided to go in a different direction. Now, when I got rematched, that was one of the things I asked. When Dr. Pepper tells me with my three friends, you know, oh, we found a match for you. Like one of the things I broached in that conversation was like, okay, so how do we handle this second match thing? And she explains like, well, we didn't want to socialize that with her or with anyone that we were evaluating for possibly matching you a second time. Cause quite honestly, that'll deter them, right? They'll nothing against you, but they'll probably think there's something wrong. Like, why did that happen to him the first time? You know, we think it's better if it comes from you. And I was like, oh, I mean, I get it. I mean, I was like, that's going to be a challenge.
Thanks for making it tough for me on day one.
Yeah. So they didn't really, they didn't provide her an explanation, but I don't really think she asked. I think quite honestly for her, she was just, she had to now emotionally pivot from not being chosen to being chosen and going through all the things, the dress shopping and getting ready and putting all the plans together. So I don't think it was something that she really pursued. And then when I knew that, you know, I was going to invite the other cast members there, I was like, okay, I can't allow a lot of time to elapse. Like, I'm going to have to tell her immediately as soon as I can.
No, good thing you did too. Travel Love says, asks, why is Chloe truly angry with the Pink Posse?
The Pink Posse. I mean, she, for those that watched Where Are They Now, I mean, those, that honestly were her true feelings. She felt like, my, again, and this is just my understanding, I will be honest here, I haven't, I mean, obviously we've talked about it a little bit, but I try not to dive too much into that with her because I know how charged up it makes her. So that's, if there's like specific details I don't have, it's because I've specifically avoided the conversation with her. But I know there was a time where she was attempting to build a friendship with them. One, and this is after everything. And I know that she was having a hard time clicking with them. I think they were able to really bond through this experience. And I, not to say that they were specifically trying to, you know, exclude her because her experience was different. I just think naturally the way things came together from the for them, it kind of created that distance. And then you had things like I get the sense that conversation with Lauren about connecting with me in social media continued to play a role with that. Then we get to the reunion and you kind of have this unified voice representing what the women's experience was. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could tell me if you feel differently. I feel like the men weren't nearly as unified and succinct with explaining their experiences. And then you had Chloe and I as outliers. Like it really felt like Chloe and I, outside of our one-on-one, we were just spectators there.
It really did feel like that. And like, I think Brennan said it best when he said, hey, look, if you just ask them questions, you'll find the holes in their stories and realize that they're not as strong and the truth is not there in that sense. So as a man, I sided with the guys, not because they're guys, but because the story sounded better.
And tell Chloe, I totally agree, because just thinking about these pink ladies, I get charged up. That reunion just had me so frustrated and tense just watching them all. That's why I didn't want to watch Where Are They Now, because I didn't care. After just watching that whole thing and Emily going, I just couldn't do it. I just can't take them anymore.
Yeah, and to her credit, like Chloe truly is an empath. Like, whatever the tone is around her, whether that be happy or sad, she tends to absorb that. And I think, you could kind of see, like, if you look at our facial expressions, you could probably tell there are moments where I'm just trying to daydream. I'm just trying to mentally put myself somewhere else.
Back like, on the couch with the blurred scenes. Chloe, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
For old time's sake.
I got a drink on one hand. I have Penelope in the other. Like, yeah.
Really nice. Hey, you know that question was coming. Are you from Keedy? Are you and Penelope exclusive?
I will share this about Penelope. We actually gifted Penelope to our producers. We're like, you can have her. We left her at the apartment. So when the producers kind of like, each group is assigned producers.
Hold up.
They do like one last run.
How do you gift a sex toy to somebody else?
That's just like leaving a used condom on the floor. The producers will pick it up.
You can use this too. Hey, it's okay. Just rinse it out.
It's dishwasher safe. Well, just run it through.
Number one, that is a very astute question, because you know there's sanitary concerns I think that you have. Penelope, I never used Penelope. Like what you guys saw that night. Like, Chloe's laughing too much. I couldn't get in the mood with Penelope. And so we never, you know, never, she never got used.
Mm-hmm. Never. So that producer's supposed to treat Penelope like Chloe, like a number two, that they're second.
Damn. Well, oh, look, Gertrude asks, did you keep any of the adult toys? If yes, which ones? Because obviously not Penelope, because you gave away Penelope.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the items that Chloe got was like a Cadillac of vibrators. And so I think that was kept. I'd gotten like this massage oil that you can eat. I kept that. I think those are the only two items that we actively made sure, like, hey, you should take these.
don't talk too crazy. I think Katie's going to have a heart attack. So I'm looking at all her comments that I won't put up. And I think she's just going to lose her mind. So...
Yeah, look, not just Kitty, because actually it is Kitty too. I missed this one. I may be drinking Long Island iced teas, but Michael could get it, and that was common in the chat, because you jumped in the chat and were there just watching before and watching the lives. You saw all these comments that women had concerning you. How did that make you feel?
Oh, I was supremely flattered and humbled by it. I honestly. Like going into it, especially how my hair was at that time, I was like, man, there will be a lot of people that are going to think my hair looks insane. And like, I don't want to cut it just because of that. Cause I really did enjoy like having the long curls. And I mean, I also knew like there are going to be elements with how I dress that probably is not going to hit with, with certain people. And so I was I was trying to just talk myself into being like, well, look, you've never cared what people thought of before. Why care now? But it's obviously different when you're for public consumption. So I was more so bracing myself for that, to be honest. And so when I jumped in your live chat and I saw, some humbling and flattering and complimentary things like that, I was really flattered by it, to be quite honest.
It's okay to say thirsty. I know you're a good wordsmith. It's okay to say thirsty.
Well, look, since we talk about some of those comments, NYCMP asks, did we find out if Michael is single?
I am currently single. Yes, I am single.
And then Michelle asked, who's your celebrity crush?
My celebrity crush? I mean, right now? I mean, because it's a list that's fluid,
But careful, you might lose all 490 people right now if you say Taylor Swift.
It's funny because I know one of the things that people were saying early on was like what they envisioned would be a good match for me, right?
Right.
Because I've always picked a more classic looking woman, like how Chloe looks. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe they're rubbing off on me or something, because right now I would say my celebrity crush is the artist Kehlani. She's my celebrity crush right now.
Kehlani's dope.
Yeah, Yanni knows. I don't know who that is.
Oh no. Kehlani is I'll let you know.
Do you co-sign that at least, Yanni? Do you co-sign that?
I co-sign that, but I also have. I gotta be careful how I say this, because working in radio, we've had dealings with Kehlani before. Matter of fact, we were part of the reason why she stopped doing interviews for a while. So again, I gotta be careful in what I say.
Gotcha.
My morning show was the reason that she stopped doing interviews for a while, a couple years ago. So I'm going to leave that one alone.
Gotcha.
Not bragging or anything. Not bragging. But.
No, that's not a brag. Trust me. It caused a lot of problems. No brag. Layla asks, how did you feel about Chloe later saying that she never would have left the apartment if you had only asked her not to? Because I'll be honest, I didn't believe that. Mm-hmm. But then again, women always say things. They say one thing and then they want you to say something so they can do something else. How'd you feel about that?
I mean, do I think if I would have said that she would have stayed? I do. I'm still a firm believer that the time away helped her out a lot, because when that happened and she asked for time away, I mean, number one, I knew that she wanted to see her animals and I knew all of her animals weren't going to be coming here. So that was still kind of weighing on her mind. And I was starting to get the sense of how she's an introvert and how she recharges. And keep in mind, we were coming off almost like 10 days straight of filming, because we had our wedding to our honeymoon to the couple's retreat to moving in. There was no break. And so I felt like, okay, you need this time. Mm-hmm. So it would be, and I think she understands like, it would have been hard for me to ever have concluded that the right move would have been like to encourage her to stay as opposed to taking her time.
Mm-hmm. So somebody asked, oh, NYCMP asked us, what is Michael's profession? Why did he move to Denver?
So my profession is I've been in project skier. Management for over. Oh.
You're good.
I've been in project management for a little bit over a decade. I've always specialized in the tech industry, primarily in any type of back-end system migration or new product launch, or like having to scale an existing product. So that essentially has been my professional background. And yeah, when I did move to Denver, it was to pursue an opportunity out here. Like I had made the active decision I was going to leave LA, and I had narrowed it down to a handful of cities. And what was going to be the determining factor is where my career was going to take me.
Now, back on the other side of things, if you had to choose one and your life depended on it, which of the other wives would you choose to spend the night with?
To spend
Austin. I'm sorry. I'm not even drinking. That's water. I'm sorry.
That might be the correct answer. I mean, Austin is my guy, to be quite honest. He is my guy. But if I had to exclude him?
Yeah.
Now, I just have to spend an evening with them just doing whatever? Or like, do you want to add extra stipulations to this question? Because I might weasel my way out of it if you don't.
Terrell, would you like to add some extra stipulations?
Yes, spend the night. Go all the way to home plate. Get nightgowns, all the things.
And you've been in the chat, so you understand that there's so many different definitions of first, second, and third. So that's why he went straight to home plate.
Whew. My life depended on it. That's tough. I would probably pick Lauren. I'd probably pick Lauren.
Okay. So that answers the other question someone asks is, do you like black women?
Exactly. Yeah.
So see, ladies, Michael does like a little coffee and his cream. Thank you.
The questions are coming in, man. The questions are coming in. Because the internet, you even said it on the Where Are They Now, that the internet has willed that scenario of you and Lauren meeting and trying to get you guys to date. And even somebody asked earlier, do you wish the experts had matched you two together? I thought you kind of answered it on Where Are They Now, but what's your thought now post all that filming?
I agree with what Lauren said when we met up, that I think a lot of it was fueled because of what our experiences were up until that point. I will say, I think Lauren and I present ourselves in a more eclectic way. So I think even upon first glance, you know, I understand why people would make that connection. But it's hard because I view it through the lens of like, well, then comparatively my experience with Chloe, and it's just, I feel like from a matching perspective that was, from everything I asked for in the hierarchy of things of what were important to me, even like what I said with my physical preferences, like a little bit on the taller side, which she is, dark features, dark hair, dark eyes, like, again, just kind of seeing them and they kind of radiate that positivity. It's hard for me to feel like there was a big mistake made from a matching perspective for me when I compare it to my being matched with Chloe. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to speak for you, Yanni. But I was like,
no, you're right. Absolutely right. We're a united voice. It's on opposite ends of the spectrum sometimes. Mm-hmm. By the way, Toya C is giving you a compliment saying, I need Michael to help me with my interviewing skills. I'm not even going to go with Sinan's fans' questions on that one. I'm going to leave that one alone. And another one of Sinan's fans' questions. I'll go with this one instead. Yeah. Why did they not show the first bride's face? I know we kind of asked this a little bit. Yeah. Was there ever any reason given to you guys? I know we said we all wish we had her lawyer, but what did they tell you and everyone else on the cast, because you're like, wait a minute, I could have had my face not shown if I didn't want to.
Yeah, so we were not briefed ahead of time. When we found out when it was time to start doing the after parties, because now we're gonna have to recap the episodes, right? Mm-hmm. And so they right before, maybe like 20 minutes before, the executive producer comes to me and just like, hey, we're doing this. Don't mention her at all. You know, we're essentially going to just show it from your perspective. And and I'll be honest, my first reaction was like, wait a minute. So like, is the first wedding not being shown at all? That's what I thought initially. Right. Like, oh, you cut that complete thing. So are you guys making it seem like are we just going to talk about it, but nothing is ever seen? And like, no, we'll show some things, but it'll be primarily your perspective. And the only time you're even going to get a glimpse of her is at the actual wedding. That's it. Mm. There's no like her getting ready or anything like that. Wow. And I was like, well, because I went into there like expecting to see certain things, and like that was informing what I was going to speak on. So I was just kind of really like shell shocked. And when I asked, well, what happened? Was this like a creative choice? I wasn't given a direct answer. But to your point, given the lengths that were taken, I'm assuming there were other implications beyond creatively, this is what we wanted to do. This is what we thought would be the best way to tell the story.
Mm. So since you didn't get direct answers, you could relate, because sometimes you don't give direct answers. So I get it. Y'all are playing that C-suite communications dance.
I absorbed it right from the beginning. I absorbed it right at the beginning. Now, I was like, oh, so this is how we do it. All right, I got it.
Perfect. I know how to move it from here. Now, Living to Do has a question that I must have missed, but it says, ask him about the brawl between Brendan and Pastor Cal.
There was no brawl between Brendan and Pastor Cal. Mm-hmm. There was no like fisticuffs or anything like that. I think his most tense moment with the experts is what you guys saw. It was with Dr. Pia.
Dr. Pia, yeah. Which I thought it was interesting that he actually apologized to her. And I thought that was a redeeming moment for me with him in that sense, because yeah, he came off pretty aggressive to her, but Dr. Pia, to her credit, knew how, hold up, I know how to handle this.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten to know Brendan a lot more, especially after all of this was done. And I think the biggest thing I learned from him was that I think that moment for him was an opportunity to take accountability and to acknowledge what he didn't see at the time. I think at the time when he was with Emily and Dr. Pia, he felt like he was being ganged up on, and he immediately went into his version of, I guess, shutting down and kind of stifling what was happening. And by the time we got to the reunion and he had an opportunity to self-reflect, and also he's in a new relationship now, I think all of that, he came back, he looked back on it and was like, you know what? I think she was actually trying to help us foster communication. Mm-hmm. And I was preventing that. I specifically was preventing that. I even think he would acknowledge in that moment, as big of differences that him and Emily have and as many grievances as they have against each other, I think in that moment, he at least acknowledged, well, Emily was willing to open these lines of communication, even if her tactics were things I weren't used to. You know, she was at least open to have these lines of communication. And in that moment, I wasn't. And Dr. Pia was trying to foster that. Hence why it feels like they're ganging up on me.
Good point.
I get that. I like Brendan for doing that. I mean, I had no
idea.
You defended
him all season.
Well, I was trying to say maybe, and kind of find out there was a whole side of Emily that we got a chance to see more of as we got deeper to the episode. So I applaud Brendan for how he handled it, because I don't know if I could, I don't know if that could have been me. I would have pulled an Orion and be like, I'm out.
Sure. All right, just a couple more real quick. This one from Tamara, who says, after watching the show and reading the blogs, what do you think is the biggest misconception viewers have about Michael?
About me?
Yes.
I mean, look, I get the how I present myself and how I dress, and I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that I pour my identity into that. A lot of the times when it comes to things like this, they encourage you, like, we want you to talk about the things that make you unique, you know, mm-hmm. but in my regular discourse, like, I don't, with my friends and family, so I don't really talk about what I wear or what I'm going to wear or what I'm going to buy. But I feel like there was a, you know, a pocket of the internet that felt like my identity was so wrapped up in how I dress and how I present myself. And that's the biggest deal to me. I think that's a misconception. I'm trying to think of other things. I think a lot of it also, like, that because of those things, I'm a narcissist, or I have this glorified image of myself. If anything, I love, like, self-deprecating humor. Like, I love to make mm-hmm. fun of myself. I mean, I wore this skirt not because I thought you guys were going to think it looks good, because, like, I don't know, I thought it'd be kind of funny, like, showing up in a skirt, you know? Like, right. So I think those are probably some of the biggest misconceptions that I've personally read. I mean, but some things are true. Like, your boy could be more succinct. You know, I have a tendency, especially when I'm thinking out loud, to be very verbose and probably use 28 words when, you know, 8 might work. So that's true. I own that, you know, own that for sure.
So Lucy B asked, please, please, please ask if After Party is live. And at the same time, someone else asked, okay, if it's not live, then how is it feel speaking in present tense, even though it's in the past?
Oh, it's not live. And that's right. One of the biggest challenges is speaking in present tense when it's behind you. But you learn to adjust to it, because there are moments in the show, like while you're filming, where you have to do that sometimes. So a lot of the times when you're seeing us talk to the camera, like they're not having us in a scene and then pulling us aside and then putting us back and pulling us aside. A lot of times we're kind of recapping what just happened, but they want us to speak in present tense because obviously it might show up in pieces, you know?
Right. Mm. And so, because in that case, do they show you the episode and they go, okay, this is what we're going to cover on this episode of After Party?
Oh, no, I wish. I wish so.
Really? So when do you actually see the episode?
When you guys do.
Damn.
Mm. The only like little heads up we get is if you're going to, and it happened more so later on, like once you develop a relationship with the After Party people, then you start to feel comfortable. Like when I knew I was going to go on an After Party, like the week leading up to it, I'd be like, okay, can you share with me what scene I'm going to be talking about? And then they'll be like, oh, this is what we're going to show. So they'll give you a little bit of a heads up like that, but it's not like we get to screen the episode in advance and then formulate our thoughts.
I assume they at least did that. I knew it too. Wasn't live. I just assumed they let you see it and go, okay, here's what you're talking about.
No, I mean, that's why there were even certain things that I was like, I wonder if that's going to make it, or if it's not, or if it's going to be like how I remember it, you know, so.
All right, I got a couple more here real quick from Sarah. For says, sure. Is Austin dating his roommate or the producer?
Those are the only options. He has to be dating.
I know, right? There's nobody else in Denver because Austin won't sleep with them.
Sarah coming with the loaded question. He's definitely not dating his roommate, and he's definitely not dating the producer. Mm.
So he's like that whole dating somebody else.
Yeah, I wish they would have shown. I mean, I get why they ultimately decided not to. But I wish they would have shown a little bit more of that whole producer element, because though, and I mean, in fairness to Becca, there's a reason why she never alluded to any. I mean, let me just set this stage. If there was something romantic, do you really think that Becca would just have ignored all of that? You know, but I think if they would have been able to show a little bit more, the question of him being like having any type of romantic connection with the producer wouldn't have even entered it.
Good point. Yeah.
Very good point. By the way, Nikki B, who has been one of your biggest fans,
she has
the beginning of the season. Yes, yeah, you've seen her comments in the chat. She just wants to let you know she knows how to make collards, kale, and bok choy.
Oh, she got me covered.
There's some good greens you need for your fight.
I got like comfort food greens. I got the ultra healthy ones, and then bok choy too. That's great.
She's got you covered, man. Well, look, Haymakers for Hope. That's coming up June 13th. How again can anyone support you in this great event you have coming up?
Sure. You can go to haymakersforhope.org and you'll be able to go to the event page, which is Rumble in the Rockies 6, and you'll be able to find me and donate there. Or if you'd like, you could go through my direct Instagram page, which is at underscore Mikey is here underscore. And in my little bio, I have a link directly to my donation page as well, if you'd like to make a donation.
Michael, we appreciate you coming on and appreciate you being in the chat so many times throughout the season, even though people have accused Terrell and I of, oh, y'all are being too nice to him because you're trying to get an interview with him. I'm like, actually, no.
Well, and I appreciate you taking, being a good sport, because Yanni's the talent really on this. He knows how to do all the things. So it's hard for me to keep up with the chat, listen to folks. So I know my role is to talk shit. And that's why I tend to say certain things whenever we do, because I think that's what I can bring to the table. I just say, especially if I'm drinking, I can say some things. So thank you for being a good sport about a lot of, but I've really enjoyed watching your journey, not only in the show, but just watching who you are after mm-hmm. the show, watching your things about Haymakers for Hope, and just your character that you show on Instagram. And the ladies on here really love you.
Yeah, and if I may say, I honestly really enjoyed your guys' show. That's what compelled me to jump in the chat. That's why I wanted to make sure that this happened. I never took anything like a slight. I always appreciated your guys' commentary, good, bad, indifferent. And that, honestly, for me, that was, to be quite honest, it was like a litmus test for me, because, mm-hmm. you know, this is a learning experience and you kind of get a better idea of how the world sees you. So when you guys would kind of talk through certain things and you'd be like, oh, I feel this way, or I feel that way, I was like, okay, like, it was an opportunity for me to learn. And then as far as your guys' live chat is concerned, you guys by far have the most lit audience that I could ever imagine in a quorum like this. So selfishly, I wanted to be a part of that as well. So I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Do any of the cast watch us?
I mean, I'm sure after tonight they will. I let them know I was gonna roll up on here. So
all right. So Emily, what I got is the novice.
Michael, we appreciate you, man. And you know, as always in the chat, man, we you know, we always talk about the chat, and they're the ones that make, they're the reasons why we do this. There are days that we come on like, ah, oh, crap, we gotta do this, but then it's, as you've seen in the chat, and you see how this is. So definitely appreciate you taking the time out with us. Now, if you are still in the chat, do us a favor. Hit that like button. And if you're not subscribed, hit the subscribe button. And if you are and you haven't done this next step, do it. Make sure you hit the bell for notifications so you can find out next time we're on. Hey, Michael, we definitely wish you the best of luck on June 13th. And hopefully you're going to come out victorious. We know you are, because you throw punches the proper way, unlike if we saw Terrell try to do it. So
Facts.
Appreciate you again, man. And good luck on your journey to finding that soulmate.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Hey, I'm Yanni Root.
And I'm Just Terrell.
Make sure you follow us at Yanni Root, at Just Terrell, and at RGRT Pod.
Yeah, send us some of your random thoughts or some of the bullshit via internet. We'll talk about it on the show.
It's the Regular Guys Random Thoughts Podcast. Cheers.